Brought to you by the new Bose A20 aviation headset. Bose is now introducing their most advanced pilot headset ever, the new Bose A20 aviation headset. It provides significantly greater noise reduction than currently available, along with improved comfort, clear audio, and Bluetooth connectivity.
Hi, this is Jeff Van West for AvWeb and IFR Magazine, and I'm talking with Bill Rhodes of Airworthy Consulting. He's a philosopher who studies moral psychology, how people come to making commitments in their lives, and he's looking at how this kind of background affects the decisions pilots make in the cockpit. My understanding is that insurance companies, particularly Avemco, have taken a lot of interest in your work. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Avemco is the charter sponsor for this project. I met their president, Jim Lauerman, at Sun & Fun back in 2006. He and I were both on a permanent editorial board for the Aviator's Model Code of Conduct. And it was really during that discussion that he saw the applicability of my background to loss prevention in general aviation.
Now, the research you're doing, you're actually using a simulator to do this. Can you tell me a little bit more in detail what this kind of testing is?
Well, the first thing we did was look at representative cases out of the existing mishap record. And from that, we built some scenarios in simulators that would let us test not just the ordinary skills of airplane control and procedures, but also whether a person could make a wise decision in ambiguous conditions and then carry it out, carry out a good decision. So often what we find is that people are trying to satisfy lots of different values. They care about getting somewhere. They care about keeping passengers happy. They might have a client on the other at the destination airport, and they want to be on time. And they also care about safety. But not all pilots get all of those concerns in what you might call the right sort of priority.
Assuming that you're getting something that is representative of what pilots really do in the real cockpit as the stress comes on, what kinds of results are you seeing so far?
Well, we're fairly struck by the results. It looks like the pilots divide themselves into two general categories. One category I call the more trustworthy pilots, always keep airmanship number one. They're willing to disappoint a passenger. They're willing to declare an emergency if they need to. They're willing to take command of a deteriorating situation, make a wise decision, carry it out despite temptations to do otherwise. The other group of pilots, and I include myself in this category, people who try to do everything and sometimes do not succeed. The scenarios unfold in the latter case in ways that we speculate look a lot like what might have gone on in the cockpit in the last 30 minutes before a flight that ends up in a reportable mishap. A lot of times, it wasn't so much a question of what they knew. It was what they cared about. It was what they were trying to accomplish. And when trying to accomplish a flight in good VFR weather with lots of fuel and everything's working great, trying to get there generally doesn't compromise safety. But when things begin to get a little dicey and push the outside of a person's capacities, and they still try to push it, then things can go bad. So a big part of the success seems to be in knowing when to say no.
So it's knowing when to say no. That's kind of a broad-based term. I mean, you know, we all talk about the get-there-itis or flights that went too far, and from the Monday morning quarterback position, yeah, it's pretty easy to say, well, what was that person thinking? But have you been able to break this down any further and find, you know, some of the traits that show up in a pilot that generally does know when to say no?
The trait, if you want to call it, or disposition, might be a better word, that seems to predict professionalism, if I can call it that, best, is something you might call professional detachment. People who can face a set of facts, think through it as a pilot thinks through it, without invading that decision with considerations extrinsic to airmanship. So you can sum it up like this. You can say people who think like pilots think and act like pilots act tend to do better than people who think both as pilots and as passengers and as business people and as folks who have all kinds of values other than the ones that a good airman would be focused on. Professional detachment in a doctor is a lot like that. Your doctor may discover that you've got a nasty disease, and he likes you, but he doesn't want to disappoint you and reveal that to you. But that doesn't really matter. If you're thinking like a doctor, you've got to face facts and act on those facts from the science of medicine. So in airmanship, you think about a cockpit door on an airliner. The people up front are thinking about airmanship. The people in back are thinking about getting there. And I'll bet that a large part of the success in Part 121 operations results from that kind of detachment that you can almost describe geographically with that door. I think if private pilots put up a little mental door and say, gosh, am I thinking like a passenger or am I thinking like a pilot? Sometimes those are consistent. Thinking like a passenger, thinking like a pilot, everything's harmonious. But other times when the passenger wants something that the pilot's not sure about, and it's the same person, then I think it's wisest if the pilot get in command of that person rather than the passenger at that time in the airplane.
Now, what do you think people could do or pilots could do in their own world, their own flying, to try and create that kind of a barrier that you had talked about, to be able to be professional in the cockpit and put aside the things that they're carrying with them emotionally, yet not, you know, cop out for flights they really could do? There is a point where perhaps you're over-conservative and, you know, you're giving up on flights that really were doable.
Good question. I would encourage all of us to reflect upon what's really important to us. What's really important to us we can only have if we're still alive or healthy. We're not fighting a war in general aviation. Lives really are at stake. The value of safety, the value of conservative risk management really does serve our interests more than almost any other value, because it makes seeking the others possible. On the other hand, I'm sensitive to what you say that, gosh, you know, you don't want to be overly conservative. First of all, you lose a lot of the joy that you would get from flying. And secondly, you might not learn things. Well, one way to help find your capacity is to reflect upon those flights that you've made where maybe you did push it a little bit too much. I think most pilots with a few hundred hours have probably frightened themselves once or twice. Just go over that situation and ask, gosh, what was I caring about under those circumstances, and how might that have gone differently? Another thing that I do is I keep a personal record of every flight. When I see a trend coming, a pattern coming out of my own actions, then I just put down some suggestions for myself next time I get in the airplane to do things a little bit differently. And over time, I do seem to be eliminating some of the bad habits and incorporating new ones. A good way to find out one's limits is to find a mentor who can, somebody who's been there and can relate to your individual flying. Talk this over with them. This is done in the professions all the time. Everybody has somebody who's more experienced that they can speak with, and maybe develop some judgment with them. And of course, good flight instructors can help.
Do you think there's anything we could do with training, the way we train pilots, sort of systemically, that would improve things?
You can do a lot with training, don't get me wrong. It's important to know the numbers and to have the stick and rudder skills, be able to handle crosswind. All those things are wonderful things, and I'd like to see people getting more training toward those things. But a lot of the problems that I think more experienced pilots have experienced, to put it redundantly, have more to do with what they care about at a particular time and a value structure, both in our culture, in GA, and in our heads. And if we can begin to discuss that with ourselves, among ourselves, I think we're going to find that most of us do really care a lot about keeping each other safe, but we haven't found a good mechanism to have that discussion with instructors in general aviation. It almost seems to happen by accident, when, no pun intended, when we have a discussion about why it was a good idea not to fly today, just for example. And I can remember a case. I was a low-time pilot. I had a motor glider, and which had folding wings. I got it out of the hangar, unfolded it, something of a process, you know, pre-flight, all that, get ready to fly, and then the winds got a little beyond what I was comfortable with, so I folded it back up and put it away. And I thought, gosh, you know, other people are looking at me. They must think that I'm not much of a pilot to be afraid to fly in these conditions. And then a multi-thousand-hour retired Air Force guy came by and said, saw you put that away. And I said, yeah, you know, I was just a little bit concerned about these winds. And he said, just matter-of-factly, you know, that sounds like good judgment to me. He probably doesn't even remember that, but I do.
Do you think there's a way that we could bring that into general aviation as a regular kind of thing, or even a way individuals could make that happen for themselves, for others?
Yes. I've seen in my presentations that there's a great willingness to have this conversation. One thing we can do is ask for help ourselves. I try to make it a practice around my local airport to say to people, you know, if you see me doing something that you don't think is wise, let me know. I'm asking you to keep an eye on me and help me. And when you do that, you give a person permission who may have been on the edge of saying something but didn't want to insult you or something like that. But if you ask, you know, you might get a little bit of good advice. And more than that, you might be setting an example for the next guy to do that.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bill. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk today.
You're welcome, Chad.